This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
We're recording just after the close today, August 12th. I would say that we're in the dog days of summer, but it seems like it's interesting. My kid's school just started yesterday, so they're already in the start of the school year. It used to be, you know, after Labor Day, it used to seem like that was the end of summer, or the unofficial, or I guess a more official end of summer. But now it's moving earlier and earlier for them to start school.
It does seem like an early start, if memory serves the way I was thinking about how long summer's lasted. So it seems like the kids nowadays may be getting shortchanged. But growing up in Wisconsin, I remember that we would start the school year earlier if there was a lot of snow days in the preceding school year. So it's one of those things. I don't think we get many of those, if at all, here in California. So I can't attribute the early start your kids to that, I guess.
And then they just passed a law in California where a high school can't start before 8:30 in the morning. So I started to see some stories that traffic patterns may be different because the kids are starting school later.
Interesting. But, yeah, I can't even remember what time I started school back in the, so many decades ago now.
Yeah, me neither. It seemed early at the time, but I don't know what it was.
Yeah, it was probably like 9 or 9:30. Yeah,
probably. So, well, it was a quiet week, but there was lots of green on the screens. So why don't we hop into it?
Yeah, it's one of those odd weeks when we take a scan of the broad based indices here. Everything is positive, and even within the S&P 500, everything's green here. So let's kick it off with the S&P 500 on a week to date basis. It's up 3.3%. Down just about 9.5% on the year-to-date basis. Best performer here is the energy sector, up 7.4%, making it a positive 44% year-to-date performance thus far. On the flip side of the script, bringing up the rear, but still a positive up 1.1% on the week-to-date basis is consumer staples. And just doing a quick scan here, year-to-date, there's two sectors right now that are positive, the aforementioned energy sector, as well as utilities, which is up almost 9% on a year-to-date basis. And consumer staples, if they match this week's return next week, then it'll also be positive. It's down just under four, it's negative 0.9% right now on a year-to-date basis for consumer staples. So we could have another contender in there for three positive sectors for the year-to-date basis, underlying the S&P 500. Maybe next week. So let's watch for that, Jeff. Moving over to the treasury market, it looks like yields went up kind of across the curve here, just slightly. 2-year treasury yield up 2 basis points to 3.25%. 10-year treasury up a basis point, up to close the week at 2.84%. And the long bond up 4 basis points. And these are all yields that I'm talking about, up 4 basis points in yield. To close the week at 3.11% there. For the yield curve there, it looks like it inverted a little bit more by a basis point. Right now it's at 0.42 basis points negative in terms of the 2-year treasury spread to the 10-year treasury there. The 3-month 10-year spread as well came in a bit. It's at 0.26. In by 3 basis points on that curve, portion of the curve there.
It's interesting, given the the large macro data points that we were pointing to last week that could add some vol, that we ended up with a very low vol earn your carry type of week here in fixed income land.
Yeah, that's right. So it's one of those things where, you know, it's a little bit of a head scratcher, you know, especially with the positive moves across all of the markets that we, or the broad-based indices that we cover here. But you did have some pretty, looking at it right now, it looks like we have some pretty decent intra-week swings on the day, or intraday swings, I guess I could say, around 20 basis points on, looks like Wednesday and Thursday, both Wednesday and Thursday here on the 10-year Treasury note at least. So, you know, when we look at these week point-to-point numbers, sometimes it doesn't look like much is going on. But, you know, as the market digests data, we get some of that intraday volatility. So what all that meant with the yields, the yield moves in the across the Treasury curve is that the bond market here looks like, in terms of the U.S. Bloomberg bond aggregate, was positive. It came up positive 40 basis points. The loan sector within the ag that was down was U.S. Treasuries. That was down 15 basis points. But when we take a look at the agency MBS market, that was up 60 basis points for the week. And IG corporate credit was up over 1% on the week-to-day basis. So definitely a strong showing for the credit side of things this week as well. In addition to the investment grade rated corporate credit, high yield corporate credit was also up over 1% on the week-to-date basis, and bank loans were up about 90 basis points or so. EM is getting some love in the, over the last few months here. If you look at EM, it was up 1.9% week-to-date. On the month-to-date, so 12 days in to August, it's up 2.84%, still down 15% for the year, but it's, at least it's making a, showing a little bit of signs of life there in the emerging markets there. Going over across to the commodity side of things, that's to round out kind of the positive week to date that we have. The Bloomberg Commodity Index is up 4.6%, and scanning all of the various futures contracts that we look at for commodities, of which we look at 24, 23 of them were positive as well. The lone negative performer was feeder cattle, down 10 basis points for the week to date basis. So definitely a strong week for commodities as well. If listeners recall, WTI crude oil tipped below, or dipped below, $90 a barrel last week to close last Friday at $89 a barrel. This week it's up to $92 a barrel, so up just about 3.5% on the week-to-date basis, and still up 22% year-to-date there. Let's see, gold couldn't quite make it, or at least couldn't quite hold it, at least as of the time of this recording. Gold is just 30 cents shy of hitting that $1,800 mark that it started the year at. So it's getting closer to positive on the front month gold contracts, futures contracts. There, it's down 1.6% on a year-to-date basis, just a little bit more to scrape some change up to get above that $1,800 a troy ounce there. And then finally, also positive is Bitcoin. Bitcoin is now just over $24,000 a coin, up 5% for the week, and down 48% on a year-to-date basis. So pretty strong showing across the board. You know, even the two sectors that were negative, the U.S. Treasury market and the feeder cattle, those are both down, you know, very slightly, down 15 basis points on Treasuries and down 10 basis points on feeder cattle. So good week for financial assets as well as physical assets as well.
Right. It was a welcome change, I would say, from what we experienced earlier in the year.
Yeah. So, I mean, how much of it has to do with the summer doldrums? Maybe, you know, some low volumes here. But either way, I'll take it. Yeah.
That's right. I agree. I would agree.
Yeah. So with that wrap up of the market, do you want to kick us off on what happened in the macro front?
Yeah, it was an interesting macro week. And we'll start off with the Fed speak. And we got three Fed presidents out there kind of hitting the airwaves on multiple times during the week. Neel Kashkari from the Minneapolis Fed said that he still wants the Fed's benchmark interest rate to be 3.9% by the end of the year and 4.4% by the end of 2023. And if you remember from the using the warp function there in Bloomberg or using that the CME FedWatch tool, you could see that the market's pricing in some Fed rate cuts in mid-2023. So you know, Kashkari's saying, and Kashkari historically has been very dovish. So he's usually on the lower end of where he thinks interest rates, if the Fed should set interest rates. So him thinking that they're going to do another 50 basis points in 2023 after getting to 3.9% by the end of the year has kind of set the stage for the market to price interest rates up on higher from on the shorter end of the curve there earlier this week. Mary Daly from the San Francisco Fed stated that it was too early to declare victory on inflation, that CPI is still far too high, and that her baseline is a 50 basis point rate hike in September. And then Evans noted that he did not expect that they're finished with rate hikes. The and I'm front running myself here, the inflation report that I'll talk about in a second here was better than prior months, but it still remains, inflation remains unacceptably high, and that the Fed will be increasing rates the rest of this year and into next year. And that kind of brings us to the CPI report. It was a surprise report with the month over month number. Headline CPI was expected to be 0.2%, and it came in 0.0. So you saw some people talk about how there was no inflation in July, and people confusing this year over year number that was 8.5% with the confusing that with the 0% number that was going out. And so, you know, normally we would say that you don't really worry about the month over month numbers. But I think, you know, as we're trying to see a trend shift or a shift in the directionality of inflation, really looking at the month over month numbers is important. A lot of that drop in the CPI or the non-rise in CPI came from the energy sector. So looking at the core, the core month over month CPI came in at 0.3%, was expected to be 0.5%. So that also surprised I want to say upside, but surprised to the good of inflation being slower than expected. The year over year, as I mentioned earlier, headline CPI is still 8.5%. And the core CPI, which is ex food and energy, came in at 5.9% versus 6.1. So below that six level and down 5%. Now, Sam, you and I were talking earlier about whether, you know, we don't want to put too much in this report. You know, one data point is not a trend. Also, it's also important to remember that there is no Fed meeting in August. The next one is September, I believe, the 20th and 21st. And so we get another CPI report before the Fed meeting. So, you know, if the Fed did have a meeting here, you know, say where there's one next week or in a couple of weeks, we put a little bit more weight into the CPI number, and maybe the Fed would only hike 50, but we do have more inflation numbers to come out. So it's important to kind of see what the trend is. And, you know, the Fed speak out there was really putting the onus back on seeing a trend, and then CPI at 8.5% still too high, or even 5.9% still too high. So we got a long ways to go there on the inflation front.
Yeah, and I was just pulling up, you know, there's going to be a whole host of various Fed speakers between now and that September 21st meeting. But two dates prior to that meeting that we should keep an eye on with regards to Powell speaking is he'll be speaking at, he'll be delivering at least the opening remarks at Jackson Hole, and he's scheduled to speak on August 27th. So perhaps we can get some insight on his thoughts at that portion of the Jackson Hole. And then again, he's speaking at a monetary policy conference on September 8th. So two more Powell speaking points, at least, prior to the next meeting. And I guess, well, I can't remember when the CPI is going to come out, but I think the September 8th will be a little bit too early before that August print of CPI is released. But I'll double check that while we're talking.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, and certainly see how Powell, everyone else has come out and given their talks about, you know, keeping the foot on the brake of inflation. And so I think Powell, you know, unless he does another one of his infamous Powell pivots, will continue with that theme. Yesterday on Thursday, we did get the jobless claims numbers. Nothing to note here, just as Mark Kimbrough wrote in the recap, steady as she drifts. Thursday, we also got the PPI number. That actually fell, PPI final demand fell 0.5%. Was expected to be up 0.2%. So that kind of corroborated or reinforced the fact that inflation maybe, while people were talking about peak inflation, whether we saw the peak inflation number, I think the PPI is pointing towards, you know, the trend at least being in the right direction. And then today, this morning, normally we don't like surveys, as we mentioned, I think every single time we talk about this, the survey data point, the University of Michigan, the 5 to 10 year inflation expectations number, this is the preliminary number. I think we get the final in a couple of weeks. That rose to 3.0%, was 2.9% last month, and it was expected to actually fall to 2.8%. So maybe is holding a little bit higher than people were, or definitely higher than people were expecting. I think you started to see maybe a little bit, you know, people price in a lot of like energy prices, gasoline prices, what they've seen, they kind of extrapolate what they've had, the movement they see currently. And so I think you saw maybe the drop in gasoline prices wasn't really something that people were extrapolating out as much as people were, as economists were expecting. So maybe, you know, I think, you know, whether it's 3, 2.9, 2.8, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think it matters that much, just as long as the trend is flat to down.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where if I were to take my own survey of what people thought inflation was today, I'd probably get a pretty wide range of responses, and, you know, very few of them would probably be where what the last print was, right? So I just don't think, you know, the average person, when you talk to them, have a concept of what, you know, how to put the inflation today in terms of percentage terms, let alone, you know, what they think it's going to be, you know, for the 5 to 10 year outlook.
Right. I mean, today, when you talk about what's inflation today, what do you look at? You look at how much, if you just had a rent increase, you take that in, and then, you know, your gasoline prices, because that's, you know, front and center every day.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, certainly, as Chair Powell said a couple of Fed meetings ago, people, you know, that's what they use. They use gasoline as their inflation metric. And so that's one of the things that they wanted to kind of keep at top of mind in terms of, you know, watching the way inflation moves and inflation expectations going forward.
Yeah, it definitely feels better at the pump too. So it's, you know, I think that's why you saw the consumer sentiment portion of that be somewhat positive in terms of the move that we had.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the one thing that people do look at in from the CPI report that, you know, as always, there's always the bearish and the bullish takes on things. The bearish side of things is still that your shelter costs are very high, and CPI, I think, Sam, it's about a third of CPI is in shelter, whether that's, you know, rent or housing. And so given that that's still at more elevated levels, people are still saying that that kind of needs to come down before you can actually get inflation down kind of back to that 2% target level.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a big part of the you know, perceived consumer price basket. Has to, yeah, I mean, that has a big swing on the directionality of where we're going to see core CPI move, at least, and then the impact it has on the headline basket as well.
So I guess at the end of the day, we'll see what the next print comes out, and see what the Fed thinks about it, you know, between now and then.
Yeah, so a lot came out this week in terms of importance, but the market responded positively pretty much across the board. So in terms of what we can expect next week for things that we keep an eye on the macroeconomic front, Wednesday, seems like a pretty light week. On Wednesday, we've got retail sales, and the expectation there is for a little bit of growth, up 10 basis points over the previous month. So it's positive there, but this is expected to be less lower than the 1% that we had the previous month. On Wednesday, we also get the release of the FOMC meeting minutes. We can get a little bit more insight into what the members of the FOMC talked about in the July meeting there. But by this time, it's a little bit of old news. So unless there are big surprises within the minutes, which I'm not sure that there will be, it's probably all going to be talking about inflation. But if there's anything unusual there, I suppose we could see a little bit of excitement in the markets there. And then on Thursday, as we started to start reporting again is the jobless claims, both the initial as well as the continuing claims. The expectation is there's not going to be any real aberrations. But again, just like the retail, the FOMC meeting minutes, keep an eye out for any unusual moves there that could be reactionary in the markets there. And then finally, on Thursday, we have these leading economic index indicators coming out, and that's expected to fall slightly on a month-over-month basis. It's expected to fall by 50 basis points. But we do have some numbers rolling off the tail end there. We have a 1% number rolling off that tail end there. So year over year was 1.4%. So with that, depending on this month's move, we could see the LEI hit negative for the first time since the last recession. And this is one of the better indicators that we also look at alongside the inversion of the yield curves as a recession indicator. So watch for that one next Thursday, see if the year over year data point drops to that negative point. So if so, that's adds another checkbox to the recession watch that we have.
Yes, that's right. And it's one of those, it's not as good of an indicator as economists look at. You know, the 3-month to 10-year treasury spread is the best indicator, but certainly that it's also a late indicator. So this is one of the ones we like to look at because it's more of a leading, I guess the L and the LEI stands for leading. And so it is one of those leading indicators that we like to look at.
Yep, that's right. So all eyes on that next week.
All right. Well, it seems like it should be a quiet week, hopefully, knock on wood here. And I guess with that, I guess that wraps it up. And I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in.
Yeah, thanks everyone for listening to us out there. This is Monday Morning Minutes. Please subscribe if you haven't already. And don't forget, you can always pick up the latest episode each Monday before the bell. We are available on all your favorite podcast platforms, but if you're having any trouble getting access to us or if you have any questions, comments or suggestions, don't forget, as you send in your questions, Jeff and I will take a stab at providing an answer for you as our topic of the week. And we are getting closer to the end of summer here, so we will be going on our regular topic of the weeks at that point. But if you send them in before, then we'll make it a topic of the week prior to that September return of the TOTW there. So hit us up on the Twitter at D-Line Minutes, or you can send us an email at minutes@double9.com.
That's right. I guess we'll bring the topic back when you can't wear white anymore, Sam.
That's right. After Labor Day.
That's right. Don't forget, you can find more information about Double Line at our website, doubleline.com. YouTube channel is youtube.com/doubleline capital. There's the latest episode of Channel 11 News out there with Ken Shinoda talking about crypto. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet or watch it, but that should be interesting. I'm looking forward to doing that maybe later today as things quiet down here. And then also there's Jeff Sherman, as Jeff likes to say, Sam, to you, that you two-time him with another podcast. He was on I think it was a UBS podcast discussing fixed income. So you guys are both have an open relationship.
Yeah, it seems like it.
All right. Don't forget to follow Jeff and Sam on their other podcast, The Sherman Show. You can follow them on Twitter at Sherman Show Pod. Hope everyone has a great week.
Thanks, everyone, and good luck out there.
The audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates make any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk. Copyright 2022, DoubleLine Capital.